Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Henny, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden and D. Quillen, your hosts for the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Humana week two.
Wow, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got more to come.
We do.
Yep. So this week is going to be Zoe Kazan.
Okay.
We're going to talk to Universes.
Outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fun. Those were fun interviews.
No, both of them were. Both of them were great stuff. This play that was Absalom, mm-hmm, at Humana was Zoe's first play.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it wasn't like she wrote it and then all of a sudden submitted. It was like being, you know, like, I mean, she'd been working on it for a long time. But still, I mean, it's it was something else. Universe is obviously, wow, what an energetic piece. Mm-hmm. Those guys were a ball to talk to as well.
And apparently I know them. I know one of them or met one of them.
Former before. Life.
Yeah, I think. Don't know.
Yeah, you were reincarnated as...
It was an incredible case of deja vu. Because,
and
I mean,
both of you had it.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting there going, in the performance while I'm watching, I'm like, I know that guy from somewhere, but...
Yeah, you need to do some research.
Yeah,
you might be brothers. You might
could be. Yeah, I should look in some tea leaves or something.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know.
We'll sacrifice some snakes or something in a little bit. But we won't have to do that on the podcast, though. We'll just...
We should podcast that.
We should.
Yeah. Let's podcast the seance. All right.
All right. Anyway, so let's do it.
Okay.
Carlin Effect. Go.
Spots are dots up close. Dots are spots far away.
Thus saith George.
Thus ends his catechism.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet.
Yet I ask you to take time to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them. And they don't all play,
don't
in, the
all
gutter,
play
of course,
in the gutter, of course. Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep fried theater.
Hey, we have Zoe Kazan with us.
What's up? Okay, well, it's good to have you here. Thanks for coming in. We have not seen your show yet. It's the next one that we see. So yeah. We're going to be talking about this from the standpoint of the fact that we have not seen it yet.
Good. I'm going to raise your expectations.
Oh, good. Well, give us a little 30, 45 second plot synopsis.
It's about... Are you timing
timer's
me?
Rolling. Yeah, timer's rolling.
Good.
There'll be a short answer after, David. Yes, take notes.
And we will have a quiz.
It's about a family with a very strong patriarch who was an editor who then became a writer, and that's sort of part of what's happened in the past. He was an editor. He had three children. They were from a sort of immigrant background, self-made man, and when his children were in their early teen years, he found this boy who was a foster kid in a bad situation who submitted a short story to the Atlantic Monthly and won a contest at the age of 13. So the father, intrigued by this boy's talent, took him into the family, sort of groomed him to be the rightful heir, and the kid was a sort of prodigy to the neglect of his own children. And then when this boy grew up and was about 27, the father said, I have an idea for a novel and I need some help writing it. And they were supposed to collaborate on this. And somehow it ended up in a terrible fissure with the adopted son saying, you stole my novel, you stole my draft. And him saying, I didn't steal anything from you. You just gave my draft to read. So there's this terrible fissure in the family, and the play takes place approximately 12 years after that. And the oldest son in the family has lost his own son a couple years previously and is in sort of a state of grief and anger that everybody else in the family tiptoes around. And the play takes place over 24 hours around the publication of the father's autobiography. Mm-hmm. And the oldest son finds out that the father has done something a little bit shady, and he decides to invite this long-lost adoptive son to the party that night. So it's a sort of classic stranger plot. But that's the setup of the play.
Cool. That's awesome. Did I remember reading this is your first play that you've written?
It is my first play.
Now, how long has, is this its first major production?
It is its first production.
And it's been workshopped for?
I started this play 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years ago, five and a half years ago, in September of 2003, in my junior year of Yale. And, it's had readings at the Vineyard Theater in Martha's Vineyard and at EST West. And this past spring, I had a workshop lab at Lincoln Center that was really useful. But mostly, I've been, I guess, working this on my own, bringing it to people, getting their input, keep working on it. I mean, my day job is I'm an actor, so.
So well, she whispered that, did you know?
Well, you have the label of what, the busiest and brightest actor of New York?
You know what? My boyfriend says that to me all the time.
but that, talk about the pressure. I mean, that label would put a lot of pressure
you
on
you. You know what? Yeah. It doesn't really, because it's just, if someone was like, this bunny is a genius, you know, then I'd have some pressure on me, or, you know, it's when they start comparing you to the other actors or comparing you to other actresses of your generation that starts getting a little fuzzy. But to be like busiest and brightest, like, that sounds like something out of Noel Coward or something. It doesn't put a lot of pressure. I'm like, nice alliteration, Ben Brantley. No, it's very flattering, but it's not something that I take as a deep responsibility. Anyways, but because I don't have to make a living, I make my living somewhere else. I don't need to make my living as a writer. It took the pressure off in terms of trying to get a production as fast as I could, or try, you know.
Right.
So I got lucky in that I got to work on this for a long time before. Well, I guess it wouldn't get a production if it wasn't good, and I needed a long time to work on it. That's a different way of looking at it.
So how did it end up here?
I sort of said to my agents, like, I don't know, maybe in 2006, I was like, I have this play. And I said, do you want to read it? Like, I don't know what I was thinking. And I gave it to my agent, and she's a literary agent, but she's not a theatrical agent. And she was like, we should give this to Joyce Cate, who's sort of big shot over at our agency. She reps Neil DeBute and Tony Kushner. And she read it, and she was like, I want to represent you, but you need to work really hard on this. So I agreed that I'd work really hard, and we started to work together. And I did a bunch of drafts, and she sent it to Humana a year ago, and they rejected it for that season. They were like, "We need to do more work on this," and I did. And then I didn't even know that we resubmitted it, and they called in October and were like, "You're in," and I was like, "Oh my god, it's my birthday!" Yeah, it was a nice surprise.
Well, how involved have you been in the process here with it? I mean, I know they from last year's experience. This is our second year here, but they do work a lot with the playwrights, and they do focus on that a lot. What has you been your experience on that side of the pen, so to speak?
It's completely strange for me. Really, really, really odd. I mean, I was down here for the full month of rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I left right after we opened, and coming back has been odd in its own way. But being in the rehearsal room was a trip, man. I understood suddenly why writing was the second thing I tried doing, because I have so much physical energy. Sitting down is not good for me. So I'd be like up in my chair, down on the floor, perched in front of my director, just like, you need to sit down, settle down. So then I was like, chewing a lot of gum. And I mean, so just at one level, it's like very hard for me to not get up there and be like, no, we're going to do it this way. And like, you know, like, and right. I want to get up there and act. And I also have like this irrational response of like, well, I thought it up. Obviously, I could act it, you know. And then, no, you know, it's actually really hard to get into somebody else's shoes. And And then there were other things where I was looking and feeling like, oh my God, every time I do a show, like in the third week, I start to think I'm terrible. I'm the worst actor in the world. I'm never going to be able to play this part. They should recast. And I always felt like, oh, that's like some sort of trick that I'm playing on myself. No, it's real. Like, every performance falls apart in the third week. It needs to happen in order for things to cement. But there were certain things where I got like a real reality check about stuff that happens to me in my process, or sometimes when I'm being lazy and I don't do my work, I think no one's going to be able to tell. And then you really can tell,
right.
You know, mm-hmm. Or vice versa, you know, being mm-hmm. like, no one appreciates how hard I'm working. And everybody does. They just don't have time to say good job. And
right. Right.
So it was really eye opening.
So this has been.
And I rewrote the whole time. I mean, my poor actors. I added 14 pages to the play in rehearsal. And I think I probably rewrote about, I would say 2/3 of the pages of my play have rewrites on them.
So, wow. Did somebody have to finally come up and go, need to put the pin down?
No. In fact, I mean, I think that's one of the nice things about being here is that there's no stipulation. I mean, there's a very famous story about Tina Howe being here, and I think it was Tina Howe, and just staying through the entire run and bringing pages down to the theater every day. And it's part of the setup here. That means it's a festival setup for playwrights.
Sure.
So, I mean, I just want to make the play as good as it can be. And I still feel like I'm engaged in that process. You know, if there were to be other productions of this, I would definitely want to get back in the room and start making changes. But not that I look and see them now. It's that right. I think that there'd be really no point in putting it to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at like Tennessee Williams rewriting, what is it? What is that play?
What did he rewrite? I'm trying.
He rewrote the one where with the guitar player with the white snakeskin jacket. I'm forgetting.
Orpheus Descending.
Descending. He rewrote that play his whole life. He never stopped working on it. You think about Tennessee Williams doing that. You know, I think he's pretty much as good as it gets. I think, well, who am I to say it's finished?
Right, that's true.
Get back in there, roll up your sleeves.
What is next for you?
I'm shooting this Nancy Myers movie right now, a big romantic comedy. I play Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin's daughter. So that is going to be fun. We already started shooting. I shoot that through June, and I'm writing a new play. So I'm working on that. And then I'm going to do a play in the fall, but I can't talk about it yet. I haven't.
Well, you've got our telephone number. You can email an email address.
You
can
let us
know what it is later on.
Awesome. So as a playwright, young David here, who
what's up?
Probably hates that title.
Yeah, he's really not like a young David here.
But he's a student at our college, and he won the Short Play Festival for the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival Region 4.
That's awesome.
So as a young writer to another young writer, what kind of advice would you give him or suggest or as far as developing his craft?
Mm. Well, I don't know that. I mean, I take this with a grain of salt, I guess, because I still don't know what I'm doing, you know? I really don't.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, John. This is a very delicate thing, because when I started this play, I started it in college, and I started it as a one-act play, and it was very, very, very different than it is now. But I had the right people say to me, this is really good, you should keep writing. I also had people say that to me about other things that I didn't continue doing. So I think you have to have the passion for it. It's not like praise is, you know, the engine that motivates people, I think. I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think it is for me, at least. But I think that was very important, and having people say, this is valid, having my agent say, this is good. I needed all of that to feel like I could take big risks. When you guys see the play, you'll see it's ambitious. So I guess I have something in my nature that that says, like, don't go small.
Okay.
Go big. And I think that that's true for me as an actor too, that I feel like, for better or worse, I don't have a lot of warning bells in me saying that part is out of your range or that's too hard. I have this sort of impulse of like, I can climb this mountain. So I would say just keep working and keep reading, because I also think I am lucky because I read a lot of plays in my job as an actor. I get to go in for a lot of plays, so I get to read a lot of new plays. So I sort of get to see, and I've worked on new plays. So going into this, I sort of had a feeling of like where you go wrong as a writer, like why plays fall apart in the third act, why something doesn't have emotional resonance, why you have to track a character's thread through, because I've walked in shoes that weren't totally developed yet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say read a lot and write a lot and give it to as many people as you can to get feedback, because when you're alone with something, it's so hard, especially when you're out of school and you don't have an institution holding you and saying you're perfect, like, you know, keep writing, write from your heart, you know, like read this book, you know. I feel like you have to be really diligent even if you don't have time, and I haven't had a break in my acting work in 2 years, so every time I carve out to write is time that I take out of, you know, time spent with my friends or laundry or cleaning my apartment. So I think it takes a lot of dedication.
Did you write that down?
I don't think it's very useful. I mean, my parents are both writers, and some people say, like, you know, oh, you must, like, in some way ascribe my curiosity about writing to my parents being writers and to my grandparents being in the theater. Like, but I honestly think that, like, nobody can tell you how to do it. Like, you just have to have the desire to be better. That's how I feel as a young writer, that like, if somebody told me the things that I've learned through this process, I wouldn't have understood them.
Okay.
But I had to make mistakes. Right. I had to fail. I had to fall down, skin my knees, and realize, like, okay, I've got to take a different path on that.
Yeah. A lot of that's the thing. A lot of times, the hardest thing to do after getting down and falling down and skinning your knees like that is the getting up part of it. You know, people think, well, I fell down and skinned my knees because, you know, it's not good, or I fell down and skinned my knees because I'm not good, and realizing that, well, no, that's going to make me better is a difficult thing to realize. So
it definitely is.
Awesome. Thanks for coming in and sitting with us.
Thank you so much.
Can't wait to see the show.
I know. I can't wait for you guys to see it.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Want to stay current with The Inexplicable Dumb Show?
It's quick and it's easy and it's free.
Click the subscribe button at inexplicabledumbshow.com
and you'll never have to miss an episode.
Okay, so just start around the table. Introduce yourself.
Jamal Chasten.
Right there, the mic.
Microphone. Jamal Chasten.
There we go.
Steven Sapp.
Ninja.
Mildred Ruiz.
Awesome. And universes, right?
And we are universes.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's talk about the company first, right?
How did y'all meet? How did that all work out? And how did...
I'm going to say it real fast. We met in the poetry scenes of New York City, individual artists doing open mics. Kind of got bored of watching different people walk up one by one. So we started sharing minutes and going up in groups. And it literally turned into sort of an ensemble. We went up as five and started doing, instead of 2 minute pieces, we would do like 8 minute, 10 minute musical theater, poetic things all together.
Cool.
And it just kept growing from there.
That's awesome. And it's grown into this amazing thing.
This thing.
Yeah. It seems like the sort of the background behind what you guys do is that it's constantly in evolution, that it's constantly changing and evolving. It's evolving. Do you guys find that to be, I mean, do you feel like the pressure's on to try to come up with something new for the next time, or you just do whatever's there? I mean,
I think the pressure was on. we felt the pressure maybe on this particular show. I mean, because our last show, Slanguage, had been about 5 years ago. And so we had a lot of work that we had accumulated, but we didn't have a show,
right?
Quote unquote. And so In terms of, I don't feel pressure. Like we're not, I don't think we're thinking about our next show at this point, but we do have another show, from all the work that was, you know, that didn't make it into this one.
Sure.
I mean, we definitely have at least another hour and a half or 2 hours worth of material.
Cool.
Yes, we do.
Awesome. We'll figure it out at some point.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Amerisville. Genesis of this project. Where did it start?
Well,
it's gonna be like Silent Bob.
Yeah, ninjas directing.
I guess I'll answer this. Well, we started writing Amerisville probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay,
and it wasn't then called Amerisville.
Okay,
it wasn't then even about what it is now.
Okay.
It started out, it's post 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Terror level codes are up and down in all kinds of colors.
Right.
We're seeing America shift and shuffle itself and wonder where it's going. We say, let's talk about the history of fear in America.
Wow.
From even this, we went to Salem, Massachusetts, where even, you know, from the witch trials to now was
everything.
We were looking at War of the Worlds and how that played in theater a role. It told a story about how America is so afraid of itself. And anything, the unknown.
Yeah.
Then Hurricane Katrina happened and it shifted all of our gears. And we decided, let's just do a little 10-minute thing just to have this conversation about Hurricane Katrina. The little 10-minute thing was very well received everywhere. And people were saying, that's what the history of fear in America is. We started really doing a lot of research into what was uncovered with the hurricane. And what was there pre-hurricane and how this story wasn't even about the hurricane. This story is about America and all the things it's done or not done in its entire history and how these people have been put in these positions from the moment that, you know, they even settled the land, the bull, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like even going back to then and really understanding who we are, what our nation is, what the land, what the Mississippi River, even the role that the Mississippi plays in dropping silt and clays from the entire nation down into New Orleans and how it receives everything from the United States, yet nothing. And then they're called refugees.
Wow.
When in times of despair. So that's when we felt that as U.S. citizens, we needed to reshift and refocus what it was we were doing. And then America was born.
Wow.
And that's my
so it started out as a 10-minute show. I just love that. I love that.
Yes, yes.
I love that.
10-minute play. It's a 10-minute play about. And those are the first 10 minutes of Amerisville. Yeah. That was the piece that we created.
I'm going to tell you guys, I'm speaking totally for myself here, but that was the first show we saw. We walked in the door. That was the first show we saw. And I was like, I don't know how in God's name you guys kept that much energy up for that amount of time. It was intense. It was some intense stuff. And it was great. You know, the performance levels were outstanding.
And coming from the spoken word background, I mean, how did adapting this to the theater and theater spaces, and now you got to focus this way because we're going to put the lights over here. And what was the major adjustment for you as a performer to kind of adapt, or was there a major kind of a?
There wasn't really a major adjustment. What's up, y'all? I'm Ninja. There wasn't a major adjustment. We are, you know, we've got chops. You know, we've been doing theater for a while. I was a theater major.
I was a theater major.
Oh, there you go.
So,
there
you
go.
You know, it's theater, but we're also poets. And instead of looking at it as adjusting, we see it as an opportunity to show all the things we can do. We can stand on stage and deliver a poem behind a microphone, and we can also do scenes and make faces and, you know, all that. And this was just an opportunity to show what we can do. It was never really a problem or nothing that ever stressed us out. It was a pleasure to be able to say our poetry and add movement and characters and all of that theater stuff.
To live it, right, basically.
Yeah. And our last show, Slanguage, I mean, that's what we did. Like, we had this walk-around material, and then when we sat down with the director, Joe Bonney, who was also here at this festival, when we sat down with her, it was time to stage it.
Right.
So we were really excited about this opportunity because we hadn't done that in a little while. So we were excited about the opportunities, especially to stage that first 10 minutes because it was like, okay, we've been doing this for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's like now we just only could imagine like visually what he's going to do to it because he's a, like, visually, he's a master at doing that, like taking something and making it look beautiful. And so, and that's what he did. I mean, so it, we were excited about it, not stressed about it.
Cool. You know, the multimedia aspects of the show, is that something that's new for you guys, or is that, was that part of Slanguage as well?
Mm-hmm. No, it was, I mean, we've used it in a little bit, but this, it, to the level is not, it's really new. But to be honest with you, when you're in it, you can't really can't see it.
Yeah.
So people are telling me stuff like, oh, there was this thing going on. And I'm like, really? I didn't even know that was there. So half the things you don't even really, I'm sure there's stuff going on that we're in that
Oh, it was beautiful. I'm gonna tell you. I mean, in a haunting kind of way. It was gorgeous piece of work.
Thank you.
Totally was.
Thank you.
What's next for you guys? What's I mean, other than, you know, the show that's gonna be the hour and a half with about takes.
I guess what's next for us right now, you know, since today is our last show here at the Humana, the next thing is to continue to move Amaribel a little bit. Awesome. You know, it has some feet and it wants to run.
Cool.
You know? And people seem to be very excited about it. Different theaters we've spoken to. It will be going to in about a 2 weeks, in about a week, we're actually going to do a concert version of it at the Luckman Theater in Los Angeles.
Cool.
So it won't have those theatrical value. We're going to do it like poets. So we're going to go back to our,
the thing that
we just love to play in, the world we love to play in. And we're going to take that to the Luckman. After that, we're going to go to the New World Theater in Massachusetts. And then in November, and we're going to bounce it around throughout the summer or whatever. And then in November, we're going to go to Denver, Colorado at Curious Theater, and they're going to reproduce it. This time for the proscenium stage. So it'll be
cool.
Now we'll have more options as to, we can take it to a theater that's in the round, like we did here, or to a proscenium stage, or maybe a thrust theater. We want to give it all the options and possibilities it can have before we move on to the next project. And of course, individually, we'll all have, you know, different projects that we'll be working on, because we like to just keep it moving until the next big universe's work.
Awesome.
And real quick.
Okay.
And in February, we're going to New Orleans with the piece.
Are you really?
Yeah, we're going to Southern Rep, which is the big theater.
Sure.
There, and they're giving us a 2.5-3 week run on Southern Rep, and they're collaborating with Tulane University and June Rub Production, which is a local community theater organization down there. They're all combining together and sharing resources to bring us out there, and that's kind of almost. Relaunch. That's the big. That's our Broadway is going there.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. With this, well, I'll tell you what. You know, we're just not that far up the road from you guys. We're based out of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, because we focus on stuff in the South.
Mm-hmm.
You guys take one of those cards. You guys email us, call us, let us know what's going on. We want to talk to you again about this.
Cool.
And
yes,
find
definitely.
Out how that how
come
that.
Come on. Now.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? If you invite us, we might just do that. My wife's been dying to get back to New Orleans.
Maybe I'm working. That's what I'm working.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you as a group ever thought of taking the step back from the material? I know it's your baby, but taking the step back and saying to other performers, here, take this and see what you do with this.
You know, I think, and it's beginning to happen in different ways. Like, we just found out the other day, we did a workshop at the University of Louisville, and this guy walks up to us and goes, oh my God, did you hear about when we did Slanguage here? I didn't even tell you that.
And me and
Ninja were like, what? And he goes, yeah, this girl, and I remember her name, said that she had talked to you and you guys said we can do Slanguage.
Oh.
And we were like, I don't even know who that is. And he's like, well, we didn't do all Slanguage. We did like 15, 20 minutes of it in this class. And at first you're sitting there going, you did what? And who did what?
He probably did something.
But then, and it was cool. But then it was kind of like, it was an honor.
Yeah.
He was so excited that they did it. And we were like, you should have just called us. We would have came now just to see it.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
I really want to see it. So I think as we grow, even move forward as a company, I think that's going to happen when the theaters say that we're theater people and they want to give it to actors. Because I think people look at us and think, well, only they could do it.
And these kids probably did it too, remember?
Yeah, it was these two poets
high school,
who did it.
High school.
Really?
So I think as we grow, yes. I mean, yes. And I think there's a certain amount of, I think, training in terms of how we do
it's
this.
A style, definitely. Yeah,
but really, I would love to sit in a room in a theater and watch some people put it up and direct it and stage it, you know, as playwrights.
Right, right.
However they want.
Yeah. It'd be so interesting. Yeah.
We've had other plays that we've created that other people have played. So that's not unusual for us.
Sure.
However, when we do a play, people don't want to touch it. And they're just like, well, I can't, nobody can do it, just you guys. And we are totally in disagreement. And it's even interesting to see how people use their own aesthetic and their own, you know, interpretation of what it is we created and see it become something completely different would be amazing. So, yeah, I mean, it's up. And hopefully people will feel brave enough to come on in it.
If I may, it seems like, just from my own personal preference or my personal point of view, it seemed like a very personal show. It seemed like that there was a lot of you guys in it. I mean, yes, you created it and everything, but it felt like it was that intimate. And so it would almost feel like, you know, that it would be that kind of thing.
But you know what? Really, the power of the work that we do is it's not.
Really? Okay.
It's not us. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's really not. As a writer, you find little things you kind of control.
Right.
But really, when I'm standing, when we're doing it, we're in character.
Yeah.
And it's not us. And I think what we work really hard at.
The people we've met along the way.
Yeah. And what we're good at is being.
Yeah.
And inhabiting voices and vibes and rhythms and really hearing it and incorporating. So when people think that,
I've been hearing that too. And this worked more so in Slanguage. Like, Slanguage was more us on stage.
Okay.
You know, even though we had moments where we were like, you know, doing other voices or whatever. But this is very much more character driven.
Okay.
And so, like Steve was saying, like, yeah, like, we're pretty much not in the piece in that way.
Well, congratulations, because it certainly felt that person. I mean, it felt like it was on that level.
Thank you. Three minutes, I'm being told.
Thank you. All right. Awesome. Well, seriously, about the New Orleans thing, you guys keep us posted on that. We want to know, because we'll be down there. We want to know what's going on. And check out the podcast. We're doing every
Have
you really?
Yes,
yeah. Awesome. Well, there it is, Jack. We've made it.
You do too, for some reason. I don't.
Are we having a reunion?
We are, but we don't know how.
Guys, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate
it. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show like I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
Well, we'd like to thank Zoe Kazan and Universes for stopping by with us this week.
Thank you.
Sharing insights into their craft and their stories and the history of their stories and,
You know what I can't wait to hear about?
What?
The Amerivel going down to New Orleans.
Yeah, that's...
Finding out what goes on down there.
Hopefully, we can be down there as well.
That would be awesome.
Contacts going.
Yeah.
Since I, you know, again, one of them was probably a brother in a previous life, so...
Or a dad.
Oh, that's trippy.
That could be it.
Yeah, that could be.
That would be it. Well, anyway, so obviously the seance didn't work.
Yeah. Right.
So we'll keep working on it, and
we have a little green demon we're trying to chase out of the studio, but other than that...
Yeah.
Then it was weird that the chicken came back to life after we cut its
really
head off.
Bizarre.
It was kind of strange.
Yeah, because it was all pale white, you know, from all the blood loss and all that
stuff.
It was weird. The weirdest thing to me, though, is how Buddha kept rubbing his own tummy.
You know? Yeah, when he popped in, I kind of got a little freaked out by it.
He was a neat guy, but I mean, come on, rubbing your own tummy.
But he didn't say much.
I
expected some sort of...
A lot of silent,
secret of life, but no, non-verbal, it's all about
non-verbal communication. A lot of affirmation and negation. So, well, anyway,
just so I know, you know, remember the part in when I talked about Marie Laveau?
Yeah.
I've actually been. I mean, Tara and I honeymooned in New Orleans, and
we
went to the tomb of Marie Laveau, and I did not put any X's there.
Why not?
Well, you know, I don't want to start messing with things that I'm not exactly 100%. Watch out. What was that?
All right.
He's up there on the roof now.
Okay, well, he'll stay there.
There was somebody there that was...
Doing the X's thing?
Yeah, and when my tour group came up, they ran off, but...
Huh.
It was pretty weird, because there's X's all over the place over here.
So... that's probably part of it. You probably need to do that and go back. That way you can find out how you're related to this guy.
That's true.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Now we got to clean up all this mess.
All right.
All right. Well, and while we do that, next week for Humana, you want to do a little preview of what's coming
up next
week?
Sure, what's coming up next week?
We do that so rarely. We're going to talk to the playwright who represented Brink. We had one of them there, and then we're also going to talk to young David Bennett, our intern.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so we'll do those two things, and then a lot more to come in the weeks beyond that. And we're going to milk this for everything it's worth. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, hey, we'll see you.
Bye.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No East. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.